Accession number 27347, Reel 7.
Stanley Brand, Reel 7. So, you'd arrived at St Vincent's.
Yes.
And had your first meal when you were describing the accommodation.
Yeah.
What was the training programme like there?
Very, very intensive. We had lots of young officers who'd been out and experienced, who were taken off operational duties for one reason or another and sent to train us. Sometimes it was because they had a special aptitude for it. Sometimes it was because they'd had a specially rough time and this was a way of rehabilitating them. And some of them were there just because they were good at their job. We had so many things to learn in 3 months. We learned quite a lot about dead reckoning navigation, about meteorology, ship recognition, aircraft recognition, internal combustion engines, the way an aircraft carrier worked, I remember particularly at the end of the course when we were given leading naval airman rank, which was equivalent to a corporal in the RAF, going home on leave and being in a compartment with a naval killick, same rank but not fleet air arm, and he was saying it took him 3 years to get that rank and here we got it in 3 months, and he was very sour about it. So we got into discussion about what we had to do, and he was absolutely amazed at the amount of things that he knew nothing about. Seamanship, small boat operation, naval customs and traditions, I'm sure that there are dozens of other things that I just can't recall immediately.
Well, can we take you through some of those? You said seamanship. Were you given a seaman's manual?
No, but we could buy one. And those that were keen did buy one. I bought my manual of seamanship. It's in there. We were taken in a boat, a naval long boat, and had to row around Gosport Harbour under the eyes of a petty officer, and I remember him saying, pull into this, I forget what it was called, but a little inlet off Gosport Harbour, and he said, now you can have a smoke, but you hold it like this so it can't be seen, and you hold the lit end inside your fingers like that, and you draw. Anyway, he was showing us the things he shouldn't have shown us, but they were all part of naval life. How to fool the officers, and he was letting us as potential officers to know what was going on. So we all had a smoke there and then, and of course he made the point that there mustn't be any cigarette ash dropped inside the boat. No cigarette ends had to be left. Everything went over the side at the end.
How did he instruct you on handling the small boat?
Sorry, how did...
How did he instruct you on handling the boat?
Oh, by showing us how to hold an oar and how to put the pintle, I forget what to call them now, how to position the oar in the so that you got the maximum leverage with the minimum of friction, and you all had the same length of oar, but the main thing was doing it in unison, and he would shout at us, and just like a cox at Eton and Harrow.
Was it easy to get that unison?
No. There's always one man who'll never get used to it. And he bollocks everybody else.
With seamanship as well, did you have to learn naval signals at all?
Oh, we learned Morse code as well. We learned flags, semaphore. We learned buoys. We learned the rule of the road at sea, what various lights meant. What flags denoted a rear admiral, a vice admiral, a commodore, and a captain, and so on. All that sort of thing. It was a very, very concentrated 3 months.
Learn about knots?
Yes, we had a knot session as well.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was practiced by everybody. We had yards and yards of clothesline wrapped on every steel bunk in the place with people practicing their knots. I think the one that impressed us most was what we called the highwayman's hitch, where it was a secure tie onto a bar, but if you caught hold of the loose end and pulled it, the whole thing came away. Supposed to be a highwayman wanting a getaway from a bank or a house, but he wanted his steed to be securely tied up, or a boat to be securely tied up and yet get away in a smart fashion.
Do all these knots have different functions then?
Oh yes, every one. There's a knot for every function. We didn't have to reef sail and that sort of thing, but we had to know what sort of knot to use if ever we had to reef sail, if ever we had two ropes of different thickness to tie together, the line to put round somebody struggling in the water, the knot that was meant to slip and the knot that mustn't slip. Yes, there was a function for every one of them, and interesting it was too.
I was going to say, how much did you and your fellow cadets enjoy that?
To a lot of people it didn't come naturally. To those who'd never practiced a lot of practical things with the family, somebody who'd led a sheltered life, had things done for him, people who'd gone to a boarding school, usually, had no interest in this sort of thing. But people like myself, who'd from a boyhood played around with makeshift boats and rafts on the pond, and slung ropes around lampposts to make swings and so on, it was absorbing. It was a new world for us. Somebody who was going to show us what to do and how to do it. We were lapping it up and enjoying every minute of it.
Were the knots illustrated in your seamanship manual?
Oh, yes. And a lot of information. We spent a lot of time reading on our bunks at night. Swatting up, it was called. But those people who were really interested are the ones who did well in the exams at the end.
Now, you mentioned some other things that have more kind of direct relevance to training for the Fleet Air Arm.
Yes.
You mentioned navigation.
Yes.
There's a lot of dead reckoning navigation. Can you explain to me the kind of principles of navigation that you were learning at this stage, and also how they were instructed?
Instruction was largely with a blackboard. I don't remember us using a projector very much. It was mainly a blackboard. And it was really a quoting of logic, so that we were learning from first principles. I mean, he'd say point A and point B, and he'd mark them on the board. You're at point A and you want to go to point B. Now there's a wind coming from your left that's going to carry you off to the right. Depending on the strength of that wind, you have to aim off. And aim off how much? And then he showed us a triangle of forces. I mean, I'd done my intermediate BSc before going in. I'd done pure maths and applied maths. This was a practical application of something of which I had the theory, but not the practice. So learning the practice from somebody who'd been doing it, he'd been an observer in the back of a swordfish, it all came home to me. It just fell into place and I revelled in it. But somebody who wasn't practical, who'd been brought up in a sheltered family and then maybe ended up as a clerk in a bank, it was all, he was out of his depth. And it's amazing how many people flunked it purely because they hadn't the background. And yet I felt that the selection board that I'd had way back in Darlington all those years ago, all those months ago, had pretty well weeded me out for what I was. I mean, one of the questions I remember to this day was, you go from A to B on your bicycle, and it's a headwind, and you do 12 miles an hour. Coming back, it's a tailwind and you do 15 miles an hour. What's your average speed over the whole lot? And the bloke who'd been a pen pusher and would say 12 and a half miles an hour. But somebody who'd done it and would realise that it wasn't halfway in between, it was 12 miles an hour. I knew it was less, but I didn't immediately cotton on. I said about 12 miles an hour. So, sorry, I've said that wrong. 10 miles an hour out, 15 miles an hour back. Average speed, 12 miles an hour. To me, it was all part and parcel of my background, what I'd been learning at night school.
So this, you're learning about the dead reckoning of navigation?
Yes.
Was it purely that kind of simple exercise at that point?
At that point, yes. Yes.
So it would be 2 points, calculated how you would do this with so much wind.
Yes,
and that sort of
yes.
Thing.
And then we'd get an exercise with a map with 3 points on it, a triangle. And you've got to start here and go there and there and back to the starting point. Show your calculations. They also taught us how to find a wind. Which for us was the lifesaver. It was one of the most important things we ever learned, because the wind was varying wherever we were, and it could vary quickly, it could vary in speed, and it could vary in direction very quickly. And how to read the sky, how to realize that there was probably a wind change occurring at that moment, was a matter of life and death to us. And the foundation for it all was presented to us at St. Vincent.
So how would they say to take a wind reading? What kind of instruction did they give you on that?
They just showed how it was done, which was you dropped a marker in the sea, and you did a rate one turn, flew on the reciprocal, did a rate one turn, and of course you didn't come back over the marker, you came back a distance and a direction away from the marker, and that was where the wind had carried you. So the providing your flying was your 8-1 turn was perfect, and providing your timing on the two straights was perfect. If there was no wind at all, you'd come back dead over the marker, but the distance and direction of the marker gave you your wind speed and direction.
But they just gave you that in a principle, that they just explained that in a lecture form.
That's right.
You also mentioned meteorology. You did.
Yes.
What degree or level of meteorology did you study in that first?
They just taught us about the shape of different clouds, cirro cumulus, and so on. The appearance of them. They taught us what a cold front was, what a warm front was, what an occluded front was. They taught us the conditions which give rise to fog, cloud, gusty winds, steady winds, storm conditions, gale conditions, hurricane conditions, and so on.
How useful was that to you in your later career?
I couldn't have done without it. It was so fundamental, which was why anybody who acted the fool or didn't pay attention was taken off the course immediately. They whittled us down at that point by about 25%. 75% got through, 25% were sent back.
Was that failure rate really over the navigation side of it and the meteorology side?
No, it was over everything. Attitude, failure to pay attention, lacking in coordination, inability to accept responsibility. All these things were taken into consideration. We also had the swimming test there. We had to dive off an Olympic standard diving board, which I think was 30 feet up, in a Sidcut suit, with a Mae West. And we had to then swim so many lengths of the bath, and I don't remember whether it was 4 or 6, but I wasn't a strong swimmer. I ended up doing a doggy paddle. I was so tired and exhausted, but I got through. And the old chiefie who'd been torpedoed in the Mediterranean said, "It's amazing how many people who can't swim do swim when the need arises." He said, you're spurred on to exceptional endurance. Maintenance of morale too. They taught us quite a bit about hygiene and the psychology of morale. We had a medic who was a psychologist talk to us about esprit de corps and that sort of thing, and providing you took it all seriously and took it in, it was a grand experience. I wouldn't have missed it for anything.
You mentioned another couple of things there. You mentioned aircraft recognition. How were you taught aircraft recognition?
First of all, using little models which were about 5-inch wingspan for about 4-inch wingspan for a fighter and about 6-inch wingspan for a bigger bomber aircraft. There's sort of somewhere in between the two. First of all, they taught us these by holding them up. And then later on, they had a screen and a projector. A projector which had a camera shutter. And with a 25th of a second shutter speed, they would flash a picture onto the screen. And you had to recognize the aircraft from that 25th of a second flash. Now, that really was something. And practice was the only thing that made you proficient at it. The other thing was that they had a whole range of different attitude pictures of the same aircraft, so that you couldn't fool yourself by always spotting the same picture of the same aircraft. Sometimes you'd get it from underneath, sometimes you get it from an angle looking down, head on. They'd throw the whole book at you. It was great fun.
And would it be allied as well as...
Oh yes,
practice aircraft?
We had all the allied aircraft, because there's nothing so demoralising as to be shot at by your own people. That is the unforgivable. A ship which opens up on a Fleet Air Arm aircraft has its name dragged through the shit in the Navy. It's publicised to try and shame people into being good at their aircraft recognition.
Equally, you did ships recognition as well, didn't you?
Yes.
How did that?
That was done
that?
it was a circular a circular area marked out as if it was sea, and the barrier around it where people used to sit, looking over the barrier, looking down, and they'd have model ships. They had slots across this floor. They could put a model ship in the slot and it would travel at a scale speed across the floor. And they had lighting, which was controlled by the operator. They could dim, they could brighten up, they could silhouette by putting it from one side or the other side. And they kept moving us around so that we were... what was silhouette for one side was silhouette against a bright sky and against a dark sky for the other side. So you had to move around to get the experience all around.
How easy was it to learn so many ships?
It wasn't easy. And yet, with the training that they gave us, it's remarkable how accurate we became. They drew the attention to the peculiarities of nationality. The Italian battleships were all sleek, pointed, lovely flare on the bows, and they'd point these out to us and they'd compare it with a Japanese ship, which was blunt, unimaginative, but a workhorse. And the same with the British ones, but the British ones had more, British battleships had more bits and pieces added on than the Japanese ones, and of course the American ones, which was just so bloody big. Anyway, yes, it was a grand experience.
Did you feel confident at the end of doing that, that you were fairly good on recognition for both aircraft and ships?
Yes, but with the proviso that we knew it was so difficult that if we were going to be in a particular zone of operation, like the Atlantic, that we'd swat up the American, the Canadian, the Danish, the Norwegian, the German, the French. We'd learned the necessity to concentrate on national traits and foibles, and they were fairly regular to give the game away. It was interesting.